O'clock, we'll call this meeting to order. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The flag is over there.
Where we can't see it.
It's on the other side of that wall.
All right, so in our imaginations, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor? Oh, further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So, public comment. This is an opportunity for citizens to address the commission, and there are so few of us here today that I think if there was a reason, the three-minute rule would be waived. But because we're not trying to cram as many people as we can. And so I would invite you to, if you have anything you want to say, to take this opportunity. Okay. Mary? Ron, did you want to say anything?
No, thank you.
Okay.
You guys are doing such a great job.
Okie doke. All right, the next thing is the consent agenda. These are typically routine matters. If anyone wants to pull something out of the agenda for specific and separate discussion.
I'll move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any further discussion?
None for me.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's done. And then the financial report, and presented by Hearthstone.
Dennis Trigger here. We are presenting the first quarter financial statements for the period ended 3 months, March 31st, 2017. I would point out, relative to when you last heard me, that the state of the financial statement formats are a bit different. And in the table of contents, you'll see then listed out. And in the past, just as a preface, we would mostly compare things simply to budget. And now, as requested, as for many clients that we also have it quite a bit, we have much more comparative analysis, i.e. comparing the current period to this year and last year, both on a quarterly basis, i.e. year-to-date basis, as well as a monthly basis. So, just want to kind of lay out the groundwork a bit in terms, and you've seen this the past couple months, but you haven't had me here to probably repeat it. So that said, we still, on page two, have our cash basis balance sheet, a statement of assets and liabilities, and as of March 31st, the court has the lower $2 million in assets, the bulk of which is still in the Marina Replacement Remediation Fund. Cash basis liabilities, again, these are items that the court has collected, not yet remitted to the taxing authorities, such as the Department of Revenue and various, the state of Washington, et cetera. And the difference simply between assets and liabilities is the equity of the court, which remains at about $2 million. Again, what you don't see relative to about a year ago, two years ago, are the fixed assets of the court. Those are not reflected on the cash basis financial statement. That said, on page three, we have a year-to-date quarterly statement for the period ended March 31st, 2017, comparing actual cash receipts and disbursements to the budget. With regard to operating revenues, we are slightly under budget, but on a comparative basis, as we'll see in just a few moments, we're actually quite close to last year. With regard to operating expenses, the far right column, the items that aren't bracketed are those items that are over budget, and of course the most noteworthy item, which was actually dispersed in March, was the lawsuit settlement of $166,000. Other items that, and I don't need to, I'm sure there's been public discussion, et cetera, over that matter, that all I can do is present the number. The some other items that are slightly over, well, I say slightly over budget, salaries and wages are over a bit, $11,000 when I say a bit. Other items that you'll see are some computer supplies, consulting, et cetera. All the items that aren't bracketed, again, are those items that are over budget. Now, that's not necessarily indicative of the problem. It's either indicative, it could be, or it's indicative that the budget wasn't actually right. And remember, we're only a quarter of the way through the year. So from that standpoint, a lot of the items may catch up. Or they may remain over budget.
Excuse me, Dennis.
Yes.
The $11,000 that's over, that's
yeah.
Under repairs.
Oh, repairs and maintenance.
Not
yes.
Salary.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, but yes. My eyes are still tired from busy season. And as a matter of fact, I did a little. We have the picnic tables in there. We have some anchor installation for about $3,000. Picnic tables are almost six, etc. So. Because the board has chosen a $5,000 capitalization amount, which the Washington State Auditor's Office approved, a lot of items in the olden days that used to get capitalized and thrown on the depreciation schedule and depreciated over time are now simply expensed. So, but that ultimately results in less bookkeeping to the board. So, total operating expenses about $200,000. Over budget, of which the $166,000 is obviously the majority, repairs and maintenance. And then again, all the items that are not bracketed in the far right column. Legal, I guess, is also probably related to the lawsuit, $13,336. So I don't know that that's a surprise. That isn't a surprise to me based on what I've read in the newspapers, etc. With regard to non-operating revenues down below, you'll see that the court is actually over the budgeted amount by about $17,000. That's because the property taxes that were really due in April, we'll see on page 6 that about $15,000, as I recollect, came in March. So that's simply a timing issue. So that's what's happened so far this year cumulatively. On a monthly basis, we flip over to the next page. And we go ahead and present the month ended March 31st, 2017, relative to 2016. And as we can see, operating revenues they're under budget. Again, operating expenses, the things I just went through, $166,000. Also, of course, relative to last year, we are in the process of the project for the covered mortgage. You'll see almost $100,000 primarily spent on that. Last year we weren't involved in that kind of project. So this lets us compare this year to last year on a monthly basis. And then with regard to the next page, we have a comparative analysis for the quarter ended March 31st, 2017 and 2016. And again, I recently stated that on a budget basis, the revenues are under budget. Actually, on a comparative basis, you're $2,800 over budget. So this also tempers what you see in terms of, well, is the budget wrong or not? Well, these kind of fluctuations are really quite normal. And I look at the revenues and say, well, awfully comparable to last year, and the budget was probably set a little bit more aggressively than it might have otherwise been. But anyhow, with regard to the operations, the revenue side of things, the port is doing as expected. Operating expenses compared to this year to last year, again, the two items that are significantly different would be the lawsuit judgment, as well as the purchase of the capital asset, $120,000 year to date versus $40,000 year to date last year, $180,000 swing there.
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
The medical expense increase, I know we adopted a new medical program. Was that what this reflected? I mean, a Medigap type program, which we talked about some months ago. Is that
no.
reflected in that? That wasn't, this is something else.
When we budgeted employee medical, it was before we actually got our rate increase, which amounted to 16%, and it kind of shocked us all. We were expecting 5 or 6%, and we got 16%. So we are still looking at options for changing that program.
That's fine. I just wanted to know. Yeah, thank you.
So, I think we've got a pretty good feel for the revenue side of the court being as expected, no surprises. The expense side of the court dealing with the judgment. Basically the long-planned covered mortgage project that's underway. And I went back and looked at the total cost of the covered mortgage since back in 2016. So far, counting all the invoices allocable to that, about three and a quarter, counting 2016, $325,000. By the way, we keep track of these capital expenditures still. The state auditor's office wants us to maintain a depreciation schedule for all those assets of the port in excess of $5,000. So even though you don't see it here, we still have a full fixed asset accounting system that keeps track and is depreciating. So to basically satisfy the accountability standards that the state auditor's office imposes on all governments.
So there's a bit of a, excuse me, I'm sorry. We will be drawing on our, I would not for saying better word, a bond account to cover the covered mortgage expenses. So how will that affect our financial statements?
Well,
because theoretically, this doesn't show the revenue in from the disbursements from the bond.
We haven't done that yet.
That has not been
so
yet.
But I'm just asking going forward, yeah, how is that going to work in these statements?
The borrowing itself is a source of funds, but non-revenue, but it will, in fact, obviously, ultimately result in higher cash balances and debt that will be offset on the balance sheet. And ultimately, then, as you then pay for more covered mortgage, pay the additional costs, your cash balances go down and there will be expenditures, and ultimately, on a cash basis, you will be basically depleting your reserve, your net assets, your equity, and then over time, as you pay down that debt, you will then basically be reestablishing that equity. So, again, you're using other people, a source of third-party money, other people's money, and that will be essentially funding under the method of accounting of the court expenditures that are, you know, governmental expenses. The olden days, those would be shown as assets in the port on the balance sheet as, you know, as port assets, the docks, et cetera. But under the financial model that we are now under, those will simply be expenditures. And over time, until the monies are repaid, your equity will ultimately, as you spend that money, your equity goes down.
Do we need any separate accounting reports to the board to satisfy that the money being borrowed is being used for covered mortgage replacement? Do we need some, you know, separate little thing that says, oh, we borrowed so much and here's how we spent it, and that it satisfies? There was something in those policies to be doing something like that.
The financial statements essentially show that, because every time we write a check for capital assets, I mean, it's an expense. And, of course, we have records backing up who we spent the money on. I mean, that your financial records certainly show all that. So, and you certainly have entered into legal contracts with your the permit process, the RFP process, et cetera. You have well documented the fact that you're doing this project and you know what the cost is, you know what your funding source is, simply having to reflect both. And that's, there's nothing unique about that. The only thing that is a bit unique is that basically, as a port district, you'll be treating all those expenditures as expenses versus many governments who are larger than you would treat those as assets as a proprietary fund of government, i.e. proprietary funds of governments reflect assets and liabilities as a private business would. But as we know, if we trace a little bit of history, about 3 years ago, State Auditor's Office said, oh, by the way, you really can qualify as a small port, and you don't need to do full accrual accounting, and you can do a cash accounting, hence the accounting system that we now have.
From my point of view, Walt, I think you're absolutely right. The commission needs some kind of a report. How I've done it in the past is we call it a WIP form, a work in progress form, that Juanita can put together of all expenditures related to that capital project and have a WIP form for each capital project. Sure. We have three of them going now, so it might be prudent for us to do that.
I appreciate that, and that's exactly what I kind of wanted to hear. But my question was kind of simple-minded in that we signed this procedure that had this reporting in it. I just wanted to make sure that we were going to execute this procedure that I didn't understand, but I noticed it said things about how we track and report things in there. So, Jim, just make sure we're covered there and what we get so that we're following the letter of that document that we signed
and
up for.
As I was stating, your accounting system, Juanita can do a report as I simply did. I pulled a report of all the costs of the covered mortgage starting back in January 1st, 2014, the first pre-project conference, KCCD, $350, all the way up now to, as of the end of March, $325,000. Every invoice being listed. So
thank you.
We have all that data.
Just a question on the statements of revenues and expenses. In the future, will the draws on our bond or loan, whatever we want to call it, show up under non-operating revenues?
Yes.
So that the numbers start to wash each other out?
Those will be under your non-operating revenues, other sources, just like we have activity all the time on, for instance, and of course this will be much larger, but we have activity all the time that affects our cash balances for things like security deposits. Mm-hmm. They come through, they're not really revenues, we're just having to account for the cash differences. Somebody prepays an account on their mortgage. All that doesn't run through yet the operating revenues, that it's the other sources of mm-hmm. funds, and so that will run through, yes, on page 6, a line item down on around the non-operating revenue expenses as a source.
Okay, thank you.
You made the comment that the budget was aggressive. And I was wondering what
could
you
be.
Meant by that.
I was simply saying, could we have some variances, and we've got 3 months under our belt, so it could be that this is a normal fluctuation relative to the budget, or it could be that, and I'm simply looking at, when I come to that perhaps conclusion, when I see that our revenues this year are a little bit higher than last year, but we're still under budget, tells me that maybe the budget was set a little, the bar might have been set a little bit higher.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Okay, so to get back to my discussion, again on page 6 we have the, as we have in the past, we have our actual results compared to the budget for the revenues. And we can see the particular categories that we are under budget. And again, this is cash basis, so we can run into simple timing problems. Down below, I can see the property tax receipts that accounts have come in where none were budgeted, as well as the $13,839 come in. With regard to the property rentals, I think obviously the largest fluctuation that we have there is the Hill House rental, $8,000 budgeted so far, only $1,772 in. Again, that could, one of the things that led me to that, my statement that perhaps we were, I don't know if aggressive, but we set a number and haven't been able to achieve it in that particular case. The next page is just simply the same report for the month ended March 31st, 2017, relative, and also 2016. And again, we can get a comparative analysis of the revenues by source on page 7, by the way. Property rentals, again, we are, with regard to a comparative analysis, we're really quite close to last year, so really, we really don't have that budgetary fluctuation. And then we can end up with some anomalies or unusual items for things like, if you look down at fuel sales, well, we have a negative $8,770. That's, you know, that's simply because We're not using accrual accounting and accounting for inventories that are sitting in the tanks, et cetera. It's simply cash, i.e. the sales versus the purchases. And so the timing of one versus the other, when you have purchases with no sales, you can have a big loss. Where in fact, the reality is there's gasoline in the tanks. But again, since we're on cash basis, we don't account for inventories. So those all, as we saw last year, tend to even out as we get to the end of the year. And last year, as I recollect, didn't you, Jim, end up with about a 10% margin on your gas sales? That's what I recollect. Then the final report is, again, the comparative analysis, 3 months this year, 3 months last year. And I think I've beat that, of course, a bit, so I don't need to anymore. Things are really quite comparable with regard to revenues as they were a year ago. And then the last page is simply taking the report you had last month, your beginning cash and investments, $2,329,000, accounting for changes in your trust funds, these liabilities. And then we deal with the loss for March, which again, that number ties back to page 4 on the financial statements, 281, 711. Yes, that's our loss for the month. Again, the lawsuit judgment that ends up with your $2,057,000, which again reconciles back to page 2 of the financial statements, which there's, and so that's our, again, we account. So let's prove our numbers. That proves it from last month to this month. We've accounted for all the cash activity.
I would appreciate it if you would walk through the Hill property numbers one more time.
Sure. Hill property budget for March, for up through March of 2017 was budgeted at 8,000. I'm on page 6.
Mm-hmm.
Budgeted at $7,950, and so far I see $1,772 in, so therefore we are under budget on that to the tune of $6,177. And with regard to the actual operations, staffs of things, I leave it to Jim.
So two things. Obviously, we budgeted for $2,500. We couldn't rent it for $2,500. It sat fallow for 2 months, so that was loss of revenue. So we have it rented now for $2,000, which is a net $1,750 to us because we have to pay leasehold tax. So I questioned this with Juanita just before the meeting. They have paid their rent. It's just not reflected here yet. So there's actually another $1,750 that's in the bank but not reported here. But obviously, it sat empty for 2 months, and we expected to have that rented.
So then on the next page, page 7, that compares 2017 to 2016, the Hill House rental is zeroed out all the way across. I understand it being zero in 2016, but I'm not understanding why it's zero in 2017.
That was during the month itself of March. The cash must not have come in during the month of March. Whereas the other report is cumulative for the 3 months, so it must have come in January, February.
Mm-hmm.
So we bill on the 1st, and they have till the 10th to pay. So if there's a 10-day period there where it's not in there, but that's why you're seeing the zero.
Okay.
I think I'm picking up on Mary's question a little bit, too. I see on page 6 it shows the Hill House rental actual income for the period ending March 31. But on page 7, for the quarter ended there, it doesn't show that. Is that just...
Seven is just the month of March.
Yes.
The previous 6 is the quarter.
Oh.
So
yes.
If I could clarify, the tenant paid in February for March, and then for April, they paid April 1st, so you won't see anything in March. Just
okay.
March.
Okay.
Timing.
They paid early, and then they paid a day after.
One of those anomalies of the cash basis of reporting versus accrual, where you would show it each the billing amount.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
I'm married to a management accountant. but I don't know anything about this stuff. So one thing was kind of my, you know, here's some things that are going through my mind. If we're going to do a more major quarterly financial review, I'm interested in a pro forma of where are we going to end up at the end of the year on the current trajectory. So that can guide decisions we make. Do we spend money on discretionary projects or things like that? And I think that's one of my goals. And when you come here, you know, in the quarterly, to try to figure out financial position versus budget, but also how does that affect our decision making going forward? Do we spend money? Do we hold back? And I think I'm not there yet because I don't know this data all that well. But my initial reaction, I think I see us sort of in a negative position going forward. And I don't know if that's real or not, but I'm kind of concerned about how do we take this information and put it into our decisions in the next 3 months.
So two things. We run a very cyclical business, as we're all aware of. The other thing is if you remember the form that we had Juanita create the end of last year that shows you percentage of annual budget, she will present that later in the meeting.
Yeah.
And that's your decision-making tool to say, hey, we are at 50% of budget, but we're only a quarter into the year. And in my opinion, that's a very good operation tool, and that's how I use it as an operational tool. But Juanita will make that.
Yeah, we can do it, and I've seen that, and I appreciate that very much. I guess I'm just trying to get a bigger picture that, you know, it's sort of like knowing what we know, will we be in a negative position at the end of the calendar year or not? And if we do, we want to be able to take action early as opposed to, you know, later in the year. I need to get smarter about that. But there are two other things I think the board needs to eventually consider. We report basically our liquid assets as a marine remediation fund. And I think we need to think about that, because I think we're going into an era where we are looking for other utilization of our cash assets for investments and for economic development, things like that. So I think we need to think about what is our cash reserve and what is the purpose of it, and not a project that may be 20 years out or 10 years out. Rather, we may be cast on to make decisions regarding investments with this Heartland thing or whatever. So I think we need to think about our cash reserve and how we treat that for meeting needs. Now, maybe we always borrow, maybe we don't, but it's important to know. And then there is another thing on fixed assets. I don't think fixed assets that are essential to our business need to be worried about. I mean, the marina docks are always going to be there. We're not going to liquidate those. But we do have some fixed assets that we could liquidate, like our properties, our undeveloped properties. So I think there's a set of assets that have a potential for utilization that we need to keep track of. What is the valuation of that should we need that? I realize property is the most illiquid asset. Marina's liquid assets, never mind the joke there. But, you know, so I think we need to be thinking about that. The port has always, in my experience, and before, always had such a big cash cushion, they never had to worry about that stuff. But if we're going to be more aggressive, particularly in economic development, we've got to manage more precisely. You know, we don't have that. So that, just get that off my chest and be shut up.
No, but I think I get some of your point, which is we need to be looking ahead a little farther and making sure that we're not getting, you know, out beyond our headlights with spending, and that we know what things are coming up, like the mortgage, the covered mortgage, and how we're paying for that. So we can set that on one shelf. Then we have this other property that we could develop or liquidate or whatever, having a picture of what have we got to work with to develop that, or let's not, you know, committed to the mortgage or something like that. It's a big picture.
Did you have comments about that?
I agree.
Okay, good.
And as I recall in the budget, I mean, we, in conjunction working with Jim and Juanita, we prepared the financial statements, the forecasted statements that show, you know, that you were going to borrow. I can't remember the amount of money at this point in time, but, you know, and spend it on the covered mortgage, et cetera. So as far as I've seen so far, the big hiccup, obviously, was the judgment. mean, that was never budgeted, and of course that's a significant financial setback for the board. Not irreversible by any means, but certainly not budgeted, and you know, you ultimately have to deal with it in terms of having less reserves.
When you do the proposed operating and capital budget amendments for 2017, we have already heard Juanita's report, or can we reverse order?
We can do anything you want.
Okay.
Certainly reverse it.
Great. Okay. Thank you. All right. So that leads us to, I'm not going to say more interesting, but.
I recognize.
Well, actually, these, especially this year and especially at this point in the year, these are really good projecting conversations to be having. I'm very happy about that. So, potential Port District boundary expansion.
I had hoped to make a little more progress with the county on actually looking at that boundary holistically. But I haven't been able to. I have a meeting scheduled next week, county assessor, and hopefully they can shine some light. What we're trying to do, if you remember from our last meeting, is assess the impact of households in that area. If you remember, we had a discussion about if we expand our Port District boundary, it has to be contiguous land. So to get to Port Gamble, if that's where we eventually want to end up, we have to figure out how to get there and still keep our boundaries intact. So I think it's prudent for us to get with the assessor and the auditor and get the number of households and registered voters in that area so we have a feeling of how big it is. If you remember from our last meeting, we signed a contract with Kevin Eliff to put together some information, because I think we all believe that we want this message to be understood by everybody, but we also want to make sure that we spend some special time with both tribes before we go public with this is the entire vision. So I don't know if you've had a chance to read Kevin's. I emailed it to you this morning. It came in last night, but I have a copy here. This is a very rough executive summary, again, to start the conversation.
I think I got it. I'm good. I think we're good.
As long as the attorney gets it.
She's got it. This is the legal pen that keeps running away from me.
Okay. So really not a lot to report except this. I think Kevin's got the right tone. He's an excellent person to have working on this, in my opinion, because he's not a stakeholder. He's not invested in it. So he has to understand it personally so he can communicate it to people that aren't invested personally. So I think he's done a good job at a first step. So no action today, but I'd appreciate any comments and edits you might want to do. We want to accompany this with a detailed map so that when we have our meeting with the both tribal units that we can really explain to them what we're trying to do and how this benefits the district.
Yeah, I had a couple of edits, and, you know, any lawyer worth his or her salt can always edit a document. I'll just give you my notes afterwards, but
okay. Generally
I think, yeah, he's on the trail of the right tone there. There's some kind of consistent things I was noted in here in terms of trying to convey the message of what we're trying to accomplish, but I'll give those to you afterwards, and you can try and translate my handwriting.
Again, I know we're all on board with this, but we have to be very careful not to be advocates for this. This is something we're putting out there for the voters. They can certainly evaluate it on their own and decide whether it's a good thing for the district or not. So I'll continue working on this and get you some more information from the county as soon as it's available.
After I grabbed my hands off, I had about 20 minutes to look at this. So I just kind of mark it up a little bit, and I can send that in. I think something that there's a dimension in terms of public recreation and environmental quality that we could be stronger on, because I think that's a community value. The North Kitsap Trails Association does a lot on both, and they're heavily involved in the property acquisitions up there. So I think we could address that on how we see a holistic approach to that expansion. And I'll send you stuff.
There are some new people in the audience, and I don't know if you want to talk about how this came about, or...
I think that would be very helpful if you would do an overview.
Sure. This idea came about early in the year when we're looking at Port Gamble, and we've had meetings with various community members. We've also had meetings with OPG, and we've had meetings with Port Gamble Tribe, and realized that there's an opportunity in Port Gamble for the port to get involved in. Obviously, the port is a special purpose government. We have special things that we can do with bonding and grants that most private developers can't do. And the idea that OPG is looking to divest itself of Port Gamble at some point, it thought to be a good idea for the port to get involved, not only in the early stages of the master plan, but also in what we can do for the future of Port Gamble, because it's going to get developed one way or another. We just want to make sure it's responsibly developed. So that started the idea. We hired a communication specialist to help us formulate that idea so that we could better communicate not only to the tribes but also the citizens. This is an initiative that will go on the ballot in November. The only people that will be able to vote are the people affected, because we are a taxing organization. They have to vote for that property tax increase. The number of people range from probably 400 to 3,000. Depending on where that boundary gets drawn. Obviously, Gamblewood is a huge area in there, and we're still making the decision whether we want to go into Gamblewood or not. So that's kind of where we are right now. We're in the phase of investigation. The commissioners have not given me authority to put it on the ballot yet. I have till August to get all of our information together so that they can make an informed decision whether this is something we want to do or not.
I would be interested in your thoughts and your thoughts about the value of having some public meetings about this, and ultimately Kevin's reaction to that as well, even before we make a final decision about whether to put it on the ballot or not. I'm always leaning towards let's hear what people have to say myself, but
I think that's a good idea, and just to not necessarily push it too far, but there's value in having input from both the existing residents of the district and the potential new residents. We might consider a meeting in Port Gamble to solicit mm-hmm. input from that area.
Yeah, I think at that point, you can wait too long, but we do need to have a clearer vision on exactly what the property boundary alternatives are. So I think that there's a time for it before August filing. But we do need, I don't think we're quite ready yet with the information that we have on that. And I think we need to reach out to stakeholders, perhaps maybe in a different way, but somewhere along this process, the people who are directly impacted as opposed to the general public and organizations.
I'm really interested in the timing is really important. I would very much want to hear, to get that input early enough that we weren't so far down the road that it got swept away because the momentum was strong in one direction or another. But that does mean we need to have some clarity about what we have in mind, so. Seems that it might be a Kevin task to make some recommendations about that. Okay.
We are meeting with OPG, Kevin and I both, Friday morning, in Port Gamble, and hopefully they can shine some light on what their plans are so we know what to involve, what to not involve.
Can we put together a straw person schedule, which ends in August, of particularly the public engagement and public information events that will take place, so we can start thinking about. I like to be schedule oriented on something like this. Mm-hmm. So if we can It's not urgent now, but I think, you know, by maybe the next regular meeting, we could have something laid out on what we think the best way to go about, what staff recommends.
Is there more that you would like from us as you move forward through this? All right. Okay, so the next item is the contracts for the office building remodel and expansion. And I am hoping that you will start with an overview of what we're trying to accomplish, recognizing.
So we started this path, again, about 6 months ago. It was something that was very important to me because I'm a real ADA advocate. And to see a office, a main office of a government agency on the second floor with no ADA accessibility, I was going, how could this survive? And as the agency has grown over the years, it has utilized that office well, but we needed to be closer to our people. And as our boating population seems to be aging, I look at people walking up that stairs and I'm actually very worried about them at times. So with that in mind, we hired an architect to come and design a plan that would give us a modest increase to our offices, about 900 square feet. It'll be a 900 square foot office that will come right out from our original office. So customer service will be on the ground floor, and my office and Juanita's floor will be on the second floor. Hopefully Juanita and I won't need a wheelchair. But it'll also have a space that the commissioners can use. The commissioners have no space to use right now at all. They're meeting in coffee shops, and this will allow them to have a room, which is a conference room, but they can bring and talk to constituents in. So it's a modest expansion, 900 square feet. It's got about $170,000 budget to it. It's going to be actually quite nice. It's going to have a lot of light. It's going to be all windows and have a beautiful view of the marina for customer service staff. I wanted to have champagne the other day, but I didn't. After 4 months, we got our permit. The permit was supposed to take 22 days. They didn't say how many 22 days and how many months, but we did get the permit. So we are moving forward. We tried to go out for a general contractor and found that really no one wanted to, especially in this environment, wanted to do such a small job, $150,000 job for these contractors. They were just weren't interested. And we have public works people on staff that can do a lot of it. So what we've decided to do is, this is all in government talk, it's the small works roster. So we're using small local contractors to build this building. We'll do a lot of the demo work ourselves, and we'll have small local contractors come in and build it. So what I'm asking the commissioners for are three different contracts. One's for Scorpion Ironworks to build a stairway to come up the back of the building. It's a steel stairway with concrete treads. We had to do steel and concrete because of fire rules. I would have loved to have done wood, but the fire department said no. The foundation work will be done by Kirby Witt Brothers, and framing will be done by Master Level Construction. So this will get us to basically a framed building with a foundation and floor, and then we'll come back with siding, insulation, and that. So that's kind of where we are.
Just on the space. One thing we really don't have is space where you can do crew training, because you're in there when customers are coming in there, or if you got a project and you've got to lay out the plans and have a project meeting. So I think this is, it's not meant to have more staff, but rather to have the space to execute the jobs that we're looking forward to doing. And I think the other thing is our entry being on the ground. We're an entry place for a lot of visitors. We don't have a lot of space to let people know what's happening, what assets and what businesses and things are available to them. So I think it'll give us the space to be able to promote the community better by a group of people, visitors, to come in for a night or two. So I think there's a lot of positive stuff about this expansion for the community.
Yeah, and I commend Jim for coming in and seeing the obvious and pointing it out to us and then doing something about it. Because it's something we've all recognized from the beginning, and just for whatever reason, Nobody ever did it before.
Yeah.
So I did just want to say on some of this, because it, a lot of people that are not familiar with Public Works, all of the contractors we just talked about, we had three bids for each of those phases. They're all bonded contractors. So it's not just Joe down the street. These are real bonded contractors. So we went through a process, and we're going to continue going through those processes to get the project done. The date, we're hoping to be done by August, but we'll see how that works.
So when you said there's siding and insulation, and I'm assuming other finish work inside, what's your sense of the cost of the rest of that, and does that fall within the budget we established?
Yes. So the entire project will not go over one. Actually, I should have brought my spreadsheet with me. Bob came up with a full detailed spreadsheet at 159, and we budgeted 170.
Okay. So that does look quite doable. So is there a motion to authorize Jim to prepare contracts for these three components of the project?
I move that we authorize Jim to prepare and execute the three contracts that he has listed here, and working with our legal counsel as necessary.
Seconded.
Any other discussion? I do have a question. Adding the word execute seemed, I wondered if there was some reason that wasn't included.
I don't assume anything.
Okay, I'm just trying to save us a second step.
Yeah, that was how it looked to me. So, but you don't have a problem with it being all combined into one step.
Like,
okay, thank you. So any further discussion? Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, I think we all answered that. Okay, so this next page in our packets is looking at amendments to the budget for 2017, and I think right behind that is... Okay, so I'd like to suggest that we skip ahead to Juanita's report that looks at agglomerating costs for each in the different areas.
So is this something we're talking about, the percentage comparison for the year?
Yes.
We're on page 202. Is that where you are?
202, yeah.
Okay. Where did you turn the page? Okay. Great.
Okay.
So anything over, if we're looking at the expenses side, mostly what I look at first before the revenues, but so yes, there is an increase in the medical because of the under budgeting, because of the increase at 16% for the year. So that is over. The consulting fees, that's over also. That's like we had said, it's just for the 3 months. We are going to look at that also when it comes to amending the budget with the new projects that we got going on.
So, question, we're talking about, we should be at 25% of budget at this point, mm-hmm. basically.
Yes.
So it's greater than 25, that's higher than, but then summer seasonal, as Bruce pointed out.
Right.
Yeah.
You can see we're not really out of whack too much. I mean, there is a couple things, but for the most part, we're in that 25% area. And as the summer season increases, our revenues will increase, obviously.
Was there a change to our, no, never mind, excuse me.
So the other ones that are, I noted also that we're going to adjust, hopefully, is the internet slash computer software. Our help desk agreement was in December, so that was after budgeting, and it was increased slightly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to adjust that one. The equipment rental is the other one. That's because we did the
Christmas tent.
Mm-hmm.
We had it before, so it increased it.
And that was a 2017 expense?
Well, we paid it in 17.
We paid it in 17, okay. Some of these variances are driven by the tyranny of small numbers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, if we could go back to, not that I want to stop this process, but
no.
I can explain a little more if we go back to the agenda, and then we can go back to Juanita and go back and forth. Because some of these are important to look at because of things we've done. For instance, consulting fees. You know, we just approved a survey of the dredge project. We just spent $10,000 for Coastal Harbor Engineering to do dredge specifications, and we just hired Kevin to do. These are all things that we had no idea we were going to do, so that's a big chunk of the budget reconciliation.
I appreciate that, Jim. I think one thing that us know-nothings expect of staff is when you say we need a midterm budget adjustment, the goal of that is to balance out at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of trying to think of all the stuff coming in,
sure,
and all the stuff spent and the variance of that, and then say, okay, given what we know today, here's what we need to do to, or here's what we can do to go crazy and buy you a staff car or whatever.
So areas that we didn't know that I was kind of blindsided a bit was telephone communications. We needed a new phone system. There was no doubt about that. We were using a residential single-line radio phone when I came a year ago. Now we've got a professional phone system with voicemail and everything else you can transfer. So,
mm-hmm.
But that really, I didn't expect that cost to be that high. So, but again, we're talking small numbers here, a $3,000 increase over a year period. Medical is something that I think we're going to have to deal with at some point. It is getting out of control, and I hate to do anything to change that. The port directors got together for our quarterly lunch, and we all discussed how we handle employee medical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point we're just going to have to address that. Mm-hmm. We just can't keep taking 16-20% increases in employee medical. So what this total looks at is about $75,000 in increased costs that we didn't budget for from the operating side. But if you look at the next page, you look at a $200,000 savings in capital that we budgeted for and we're not going to spend. So they do offset themselves. So there really isn't a big doom and gloom because we're spending less in capital than we thought and budgeted, and a little more on operating than we budgeted for. And a lot of that has to do with the excellent bids that came in for covered mortgage. That's a $200,000 savings that the engineers, they estimated, and we saved $200,000 with good bids.
That's compartmented, though, because we're going to borrow to that. So this is sort of a little separate from that, which is the borrowing is going to pay for it. And I appreciate that was great work. Actually, I got compliments from the bank, Kitsap Bank, who said Jim just did a fantastic job in negotiating. Just at that event this morning. So.
So you can go down and you can see the items that we've changed our budget, and the commissioners approved was parking lot repair for $7,500. That was a project that we approved a couple months ago. And the launch ramp dock repair, which you approved for $22,000, which wasn't reflected in our initial capital budget. And then cleaning the underside of docks was a matter of when we got into covered moorage and we put a diver down in the water, we realized there was 3 feet of mussels growing on the bottom of our floats, which were taking our docks and sinking our docks. So we actually have a diver going down to clean the bottom so that we can raise them back up.
Changing an ecosystem.
Yeah. So that's kind of, those are kind of the numbers. I don't think, I think in the long run, it's all going to balance out, but there are some expenditures we've approved that, weren't in the, radar in November of last year.
One thing, I understood that when we got the covered moorage done, we were going to upgrade our Wi-Fi, because that's important to transient moorage and our business base. So is that in here?
So if you look at repair and maintenance, there's a $12,000 increase in repairs and maintenance. One of that is for a pressure washer, because we definitely need a new pressure washer. Okay. The next thing is fiber. So that fiber network, actually, it's already done. We have fiber pulled all the way through the marina. And as soon as the roofs are done, Steve is going to install new Wi-Fi antennas that will be driven directly by fiber network right from the PUD.
So that's covered in this repair and maintenance. Is that, I remember hearing how much that makes a decision whether you pull in for a visiting boater. And
we will have very fast Wi-Fi here in the next 2 months.
Excellent.
And then the other thing was, we all know the yacht club roof was leaking terribly, and we had to spend $3,300 to repair that roof. So that was something, again, that didn't know that one was coming, but had to take care of our building.
Well, that's why we have reserves.
So could you talk a little bit about the, it's not proportionally a giant increase, but the increase in salaries and wages? Again, it's less than 10%, but I'd like to hear a little more.
So you're talking about the addition in this, what we're asking for now?
Yes.
From 509 to 519? There's at least one and possibly two employees that have done an exemplary job in the last year, and I feel that they are seriously underpaid, and I'd like to give them a merit raise. So it's something, when we budgeted last year, we did a 3% across the board for everybody, and that was great, but there are some people that stand out that really deserve a little more than that. So that's an additional $10,000.
And when do you expect to be, is that, that's another process that we'll discuss, how that goes forward. Or are you doing that as we speak?
I would do that.
Okay, just without. Okay. So is that like a promotion?
No.
Just a merit raise?
Yeah.
So no different responsibilities?
No.
Okay. I have a lot of second thoughts about replacing the gates and dock entrances. I brought it to our Parks and Trails Committee, and I don't know. And I kind of got an opinion, and then subsequently I've been asking people that walk down there and boat owners and all. And given that we have a lot of uncertainties of our potential liabilities in other areas, I mean, I'm not saying no, but I think we should hold off on going there. The other issue is there may be a plan B of refurbishing what we have that seems to, actually that's what boat owners say, well, why aren't you fixing what you got? So I think there's some things like that. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up, and this is on the flakier side, so we did talk about public art when we got the marina covered moorage done, that there may be some way to support Kingston's branding or identity when we had that to do it. And I really think you that was one of your early ideas, and I thought it was very innovative of you to say, hey, look, you know, you could done right. We could do a lot for community identity and the visitor experience here, looking at that. So I think that may be an option that we want to think about when we get done with that. And so I'd just like to hold off on going there on that because of the feedback I've gotten. And I don't want to get into the details here, but I talked to a lot of people.
What's the your thought, Jim, as far as currently is timing on the gates?
I'm going to wait until covered mortgage is done, so we're looking at probably August.
Okay. Yeah, the thing that concerns me about the existing gates, not as a boater, but, you know, looking at them, actually they're not very secure. They're pretty easy to get around. There's liability issues there, and there's, you know, I'll let our general counsel weigh in heavily on that if she wants to, but I worry about the day somebody forgets their key or whatever, or the night they forget their key and try and scoot around the gate and fall off and don't get out of the water. Mm-hmm. The idea of moving them up, almost if you could even take the existing ones and moving up to the top of the ramp, you know, maybe it doesn't need to be a $70,000 job, but I think $70,000 compared to the losses we could suffer from people being able to bypass that system would be pretty small.
I guess I'm not so concerned. Most marinas, like Polisville, doesn't have gates. You know, and you don't have gates in Port Townsend. I think gates are more of a privacy element for the residents than it actually is a deterrence to crime. The crime that has happened is usually has been from the water recently. People take boats in and they steal outboard motors and things. So I think it's done the job well. I don't see the gate as being the primary deterrent, perhaps the camera system we talked about. But I'm not, at one point in the marina business was why have the gates at all? Because it means the public can't get down to your docks, and particularly in places like Boston and such, the public is saying, well, why can't we have that access? There are a number of reasons for not moving it up. I could get into them. One is the first comment, well, it breaks up the view to the marina and the waterfront. Second, makes it look like a prison. Third, it makes it look like a gated community. And fourth, well, we like to take our kids down there and stand on the gangway and look at the starfish in the water. So that was kind of this feedback, and I was just asking people, and I was thinking of keeping the current gates more as holding off on the expense while we have some considerably, I think, uncertainty in our costs for the remainder of the year. So that's kind of where I was. I first was asking Mary Gates, you know, up or down. But then all these people, particularly boaters, said, well, why are you doing it at all? These were boaters. Why are you doing this at all? One problem we had with the gates when Ed did it, he didn't put the proper closure mechanisms in it. He used a light-duty closure mechanism. So typically that's one cylinder. But the heavy-duty ones have the ability to stay open for up to a minute. So you can actually push your cart through without having to bang the gate with your cart. So there's things we can do to enhance the serviceability of them, maybe the security. But as has been pointed out, someone just got to put a dinghy in the water. And, you know, that's I don't think the gates are a significant.
There will always be somebody who can think around any system you put up.
Yeah. This is more the casual.
And so I'll defer to the three of you who have far more boating and marina experience than I do, but I do look at those as a security and safety issue. And there's some aesthetics to the current gates that could be improved.
Okay. Again, I'm just asking to defer.
But we have a few months to kick that around.
Yeah, I just don't want to jump off and do it right away. Okay.
Does it disrupt any workflow at all to defer?
There, is an engineering issue, which I mentioned to Jim this a day or two ago, that we need to check out on that. So.
So the budget amendment that you're asking for is this shown on the horizontal shape?
Well, actually, that's a reduction. So the number is a reduction, so don't reduce it, though. Actually, what I'm asking for basically is the $74,536. And like I said, so much of that is already spent. This is to codify. When you realize just on the dredging, we've spent almost $30,000 probably, or close to it. So it's a big chunk of that. So this would codify and give us a quarterly update on where we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we could look this at again at the mid-year point, mm-hmm. and then say mid-course correction if some of these other costs may come in.
Well, then I move that we approve an amendment to our 2017 adopted budget to reflect the changes provided here, with a total increase in the budget of $74,536 in expenditures.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
There you go. Okay, Executive Director report.
This one's an easy one. We've covered a lot of these already. The trusses, if you notice in the parking lot, we've got trusses, we've got beams, we've got equipment. The floats are in the water. They will start ripping roofs off on Friday morning. So that project is 6 weeks late, but it's running anyway. So that's good news. Office building plans, we received
Jim,
our permit.
Jim, just a question on that. Do we have, I haven't checked the website, do we have a little blurb there on what's going on?
We don't.
I got asked just yeah. when
we
I was saw it. Yeah, people are asking because they saw the big crane there with the floats and yeah.
Let me try to get something up this week.
Mm-hmm. So before you resume, it's my sense that Sam Berger was doing a lot of the website.
All of it.
All of it. So do you have a way of backstopping that at this point?
Yeah. Jeanette's being trained, right, Jeanette? She did her first post the other day, so we're working on that and getting her up to speed. So yeah.
Great, and thank you for jumping in. Actually, I would thank the entire staff for jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
So everything.
Thanks. So anyway, office building. The only thing stopping us from starting to dig foundation is we need those back stairs up. Because as soon as the back stairs go up, the deck gets ripped off, so we can't do anything until that's done. So now that we have approval on that, we can move that project forward. We have a permit on Washington Park, so that was another bottle of champagne that I didn't drink. So we have the permit. We've spoke of this quite a few times. One of the issues I had was, you all know we're working with the county to try to make this work. But I went to the county and said, yes, but I want my permit. And they said, yes, but we're not going to be doing it until the first quarter of next year. And I said, yes, I want my permit. I want to make sure that I had my permit. The issue, and I think I explained to a few of you, is the county is going to be raising that road 18 inches. If you look at the road, it kind of goes at an angle. And so they need to raise the park side to the same elevation as the Chamber of Commerce building side. So if I were to start and build a park now, I'd have to put probably a 2-foot curb in there because when the county comes in to raise the road, it's got to match. So that's one of the reasons I want to wait and do this project with the county. It's do it once, dig it up once. So RCO is okay with that, but we need to update the community because the community is expecting that park to happen this summer, and it's not going to happen this summer. The county did promise me they are starting first quarter. They have the funding. But I think if by February they're not moving dirt, we need to start moving dirt by February because we have to be done by the end of next year totally for our grant.
So if the county was not able to go timely, and we went ahead and started, then whose responsibility would it be to create the elevation match?
I would say it's theirs. Okay. They would have to remove that and redo it.
And the 10-foot sidewalk and all
yeah,
that.
The whole thing, yeah. It's a complicated project. It looks so simple, but there's nothing simple about it because of that elevation change. And because they're getting state money, they have to follow DOT standards, so they can't have a slope to the road. It has to be leveled.
So that they need to be aware of what Mary brought up, because we're trying to stay within the RCO grant thing, and the match is the property donation. So it's not a budgeted item to exceed the RCO grant amount for that project.
And interestingly, my experience with County Public Works is that they're very aware of their own grant and funding cycles and not as aware of others. And I think that's a good idea to make a point of that being the outcome and our expectation concerning responsibility for it.
Okay. So. Onto the curb grant, I have a call with Heartland on Monday, our follow-up call. Their draft report is due on the 23rd of May for the commissioners to review, and then we have until the 15th of June to make changes to that, do whatever we need to do to submit to the Department of Commerce. We have the permit for the tent. It was a good day at the county. We got a lot of permits. So it'll be going up Sunday the 7th. Mm-hmm. And any help that if commissioners would like to go and use some brawn, I know, Bruce, you'll be gone, but Randy needs all the help he can get, because Kiwanis is going to be at some event that day, and it's not going to be easy to get a lot of people there. So, and the Yacht Club is going to be in Seattle for their opening day on that day. So,
as a Rotarian, yeah. I'm trying to get our Interact Club to do a YouTube video of the raising. The point is being, you can have it in a procedure, but there's a lot of people doing something simultaneously, so it's so, you know, hopefully we can get some documentation that people could review if Randy is no longer around to do it.
Yeah, good point.
So the next point is wrong. I meet with Clint Boxman tomorrow, not today, on the electronic sign reader. I forgot about our breakfast this morning, so we moved our breakfast meeting tomorrow with Clint to talk about how the port can get involved in that or not get involved in that, but really to find out what the electronic sign is doing and where it's going.
The port had looked into this some years ago, and I don't know why. So I think there's a question of the attorney of the what constraints would be on the port contributing to an electronic reader board sign not on our property.
Would it be to serve port purposes?
I think that defining how that does, it would be for a lot of public events, and a lot of public events occur on the port property, 4th of July, Christmas, and all those sort of things. So it would serve not-for-profit purposes, including port, but we probably could also have port information on it.
Yeah,
but we need to know the constraints, I think.
And making sure that you have a consistent policy that doesn't be applied across the board. And we have some examples of those we can share with Jim.
Just one question back on the 10th. That's a typo, right, as far as the takedown date. It should be October 31st, not October 1st.
Yes. So it's the 31st of October.
It has eagle eye.
You get 6 months.
Does a pen do that?
On its own.
On its own. Okay. This, I think, is long overdue in our community. We don't have a month. We don't have a radio station. We don't have a week daily paper. And to get the word out on events is just hard. And those manual signs are just hard. So we're a lot of the Sun Incorporated community doesn't have a way of doing things like without something like this. So
my understanding from the discussions of the chamber about this sign is that because it's on the state, it will be on the state highway right of way, it can only advertise nonprofit events and functions. And that's has caused the chamber some degree of hesitation, because some members of the chamber are pointing out, well, we're all, you know, commercial oriented, and so why are we supporting this, you know, kind of thing? So it's a thorny question, and there again, that's something where council is probably going to have to do a little head scratching to figure out just how to navigate the process.
There are more than one locations. I think the preferred location is to do it at Lindvog Road, mm-hmm. and I believe that's on county property. Now, it may not be state-owned property, but it's in the scenic highway regulation yeah. area.
I guess so. I think on the state right-of-way.
Yeah, I think so, but it's actually county property that the sign would be built on, as my last heard, and you can get more info from Clint on that. But if you go out to, say, George's Corners, I think some of those locations there are on state-owned right-of-way. So it that's a kind of a technical question. And again, it's up to the chamber to decide. But even if it's on county property, I think there would be some difficulties using a county resource, county mm-hmm. property, for commercial use. So this issue may not depend upon what is county or state. Mm-hmm. So that's okay.
To be continued.
To be continued.
So we should anticipate that this would come back to us next month, or?
Or if they need something earlier, we can talk about it in our Tuesday morning conversation.
Okay.
When you talk to Clint and get yeah. the, yeah.
Potentially resulting in a special meeting to make,
right.
okay. To make decisions. The setup is that we have a weekly meeting that's a work session. We don't make decisions. We get updated on what's going on, and then if something comes up in the course of the month or in the course of those meetings that we realize we need a decision, then we call a special meeting, and so that we can do action. Yes. Okay. All right. So now that takes us to Juanita's report, and we have a little bit better context for it, I think.
So I don't know if you wanted to come back and review the rest of this, or are we good?
I was happy with the information you provided us. I don't know. I think I understand it a little bit better.
Just a question on the format that maybe you can help me with. I want to make sure that I'm reading it right. So when it says on the income mortgage base rate, where it says dollars over budget, that $446,000 number there, that negative, is what's remaining in the budget to be spent. Okay. And as long as we're at the first quarter, 25% of the budget is our benchmark in terms of expecting high or low, but we can look at some things like, I think it was dues and memberships or something like that, which I think typically come around the first of the year, so having that high at this time of year is not indicative of a problem, it's just a timing issue.
Right.
Okay.
So is the gradual, I mean, it's only 3 months, is the increase in park-related costs. I really like this report, Juanita, that shows the costs and hours by cost center. So we have the big Christmas lights piece in January, and then February it's way dipped down to under $1,000, and March is over $1,000, and I guess I'm making the inference that may continue to grow over the course of the year as we're in the high flower season and gardening and park maintenance. Is that?
Yes,
okay.
We haven't found a way of segregating out our costs associated with the Kingston Express, Verlaine, the causeway to that, and the dock and the fishing dock. I've kind of mentioned this, but I think as we go into negotiations with Kitsap Transit, we probably want to know what it costs for that. Actually, that's a Sound Runner or passenger-only ferry type facilities.
Right. And I didn't put it in this one page because no one has gone out to the ferry yet for me to.
Well, I know it's.
But for this month, they've been out there this month, and I told them to write it down.
So we'll be able to capture, or maybe just make an estimate of what it. And this is probably a next year type of thing, but I'd like to try to collect the data so that we have some idea of what the fair market value of that facility is for the Kitsap Transient.
Okay, and the profit and loss by class, I do have the ferry repair section on there.
Okay.
Have we heard from their transit in terms of their interest in or their intentions with using the Washington State Ferry dock?
I get to meet the new director tomorrow, so I'll let you know. Okay. Yeah, I haven't had any communication with him at all. John's going to bring him by to introduce him.
Okay. Commissioner report.
I don't believe I have anything to add at this point.
I mentioned the Parks and Trails meeting looking at the proposed fencing arrangement, and I don't think any more of that. There is something in the ferry budget stuff, which is of kind of a general interest, realizing they're in budget reconciliation, so the Senate and the House are kind of trying to figure out. But there is $500,000 for the 104 realignment in the Senate version of the transportation bill. So that would be engineering work to progress that forward. So if the House agrees, then that project will move along. That's all I have.
Okay. And I am very much in the mood to say that we had a wonderful event here in this facility this morning. Mm-hmm. And actually from our preliminary counting of commitments and checks and so on and so forth, that we exceeded our goal for this event, and looks like we raised over $60,000. So just keep moving along.
Keep chipping away.
So, okay. Other staff comments?
Carolyn?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other public comments? Comments about our conversation? Yes.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, a comment on Walt. I agree with him on the gates, and I would be terribly disappointed if those gates were moved without public comment. As a former leasee on Dock C and a resident, I would like to have public comments before we do anything. I'd also ask Dennis on a different subject. You mentioned that Cache County was for small ports. And when Jim mentions the boundary could include 3,000 people, that's a 75% increase in the number of residents we have now. Would that trigger this into, no?
It's $5 million revenue number is what they.
And then it's mandatory?
Yeah.
Okay.
So quite a ways away from that.
When we get to the expansion, the port expansion, is there any benefits to the people that won't vote for the rest of us? Or is that, it doesn't sound like we're going to be included in the dialogue if we don't live in Port Gamble.
No, I think that the commissioner said you will be included in the dialogue. And we haven't defined those benefits, but there are probably going to be some benefits for all residents of Kingston.
So when are you going to tell us what the benefits are?
We're still developing those.
A fine legal point. The port can't promote it, but the commissioners can.
Commissioners can.
As long as we don't use port resources.
As long as
we
don't use
so
port resources.
We individually can say, here's why it's really a good idea and the benefits.
Information mm-hmm. from which people could draw conclusions.
Okay. Well, you should get that out to us, because if we think that that's a good idea, a lot of us can promote it. Mm-hmm. one more comment, if I may. When you talk about a pro forma, I think a lot of us have always wanted a five-year pro forma for the port. But when you mentioned one-year pro forma and you wanted to maybe consider the assets you have, property, I don't know if you were implying that you might sell some of those assets or not, but if you do, I would certainly like to see the public aware of what the values are of those assets. And book value doesn't mean anything. It's what those assets are really worth. If you guys are going to get to that point before you do it, would you go appraise those, all your properties, so we can see what your process is if you intend to sell them?
I was talking about, we have our asset classification in Marina Remediation Fund or something like that, or Replacement Fund, and then we have these investments we've made in properties. Then there's everything else, which is really our business, and it's not something that is you would consider selling North Beach. So, but those are assets that we may have to look at as we make decisions going forward, and they're actually like a reserve asset. One's liquid and one's not liquid, one's land. So I was just trying to at least have that classification, so when the board goes forward and looks to make decision making, that we could look at what are the disposable assets the board has to make investments in the community. So it was more like not a decision, no decision there, to spend the money, but rather knowing what is available to us.
So the assets that you have that you could sell are the KCYC, the Hill property, the property next to it.
I don't see the KCYC since the port uses that for our port maintenance area.
Well, yeah. So I'm going to take that. You're not intending in the near future to sell any of the assets you have.
Well, Heartland could come out with a finding that says recommends the sale of the assets of those three properties we bought to a developer or something. So we could find a recommendation, but it's too soon to see what they're going to say. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
And then would there be, following that question, would there be an opportunity for public meetings and stuff like that around the sale of waterfront owned by the public now?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Right. Totally.
And then my other question is, what is the cost to the port of the ballot measure, of getting it on the ballot? What's the cost?
It's depending on how many registered voters, how many ballots. So the assessor counts them as far as how many people they're going to have to mail ballots to. So we won't know that until we define the boundary.
So you don't know the cost?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably looking at $5,000, $6,000, everything.
Because, the library's going out for a bond, and I'm just thinking that people are not going to want to vote yes on two taxes or two. Just a thought, this might not be the good timing.
I think we're talking about August filing, but September.
It's November.
But it's
November.
The November ballot.
November ballot.
And the library's going to be on the November ballot, as I understand.
Okay.
No, that's good to know. If that, those things factor in.
I'm Dee McKinnon, and I'm here on behalf of the Kingston Historical Society. We like to be present at your meetings, and we know we exist. You know we exist. Because we have no physical space, we're always open to a display case, a wall, someplace where we can have rotating information about the history of Kingston. So when you get into the finishing stage of your remodel, if you would please keep us in mind.
We will do that. Thank you. That would be fabulous. Thank you.
Ron?
One last question. If May 15th is the last date where people in District 3 can sign up to run as a commissioner, and if we don't have more than one or two, I would ask the commissioners to consider putting on the ballot a four-year term instead of a six-year term, or more generally to figure out how to get more people engaged in the port. So that would be your next general meeting. And to me, if we don't have people sign up very many, on the 15th of May, I think it's time for the commissioner to consider that.
To get a ballot measure together for the August ballot would be very difficult legally and technically, I think. And I think you're talking about three or six, because there's three commissioners. So divisible by three works, in terms of terms, better than divisible by four.
Well, I know there's several courts on four. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if we can do three-year terms.
And the county commissioners do it with two on 1 year and one on the other.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know, but there's a lot of those things. Yeah.
I don't care how you do it. I'd like you to consider if we don't have an interest in somebody wanting to be a commissioner. I mean, it's an important job. And obviously, a lot of the public isn't too engaged yet either. And when you get a couple commissioners fighting it out for a candidacy, it's kind of fun to come. But the only time we get
Have you signed up yet?
The ins and outs.
There you go, Ron.
You guys know that.
Have you signed up yet?
Wrong district. Wrong district.
They'll catch me because I don't live in that district. Oh. But I might sign up anyway. It's only $24.
Okay. Well, I too have heard many people comment on the length of the term as a deterrent to even thinking about it. So we've talked about it off and on over time. It's a question of timing, and I think we'll have that conversation if that happens in May. If it doesn't happen in May, so we can. Thanks for bringing that up. Any other comment? Okay, well, we're going to recess to an executive session. What is your estimate of how long that will be, Jim and Carolyn?
I would think 45 minutes, Carolyn.
Sounds good.
It's quite a few, yeah.
Okay, so that's 3:15.
Are we going to make any decisions after that session for people who may want to come back?
It looks as though that you may.
Yeah.
The evaluation review, at least one item.
Okay.
So there may be action when we reconvene at 3:15. So.